bangthebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, March 4th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off a new week here on Bang the Book Radio. I'll start things off with your listener questions in this week's version of the Monday Mailbag. Got some very good submissions here for today's list, including how I got my start in the business here, when the Bettors Box will return to the airwaves, looking for regression candidates in Major League Baseball, and then also college basketball stuff, looking at the NCAA tournament futures overall, and then also why mid-range underdogs appear to be a pretty good bet in the college basketball market. In the second half of today's show, we'll have Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, join me. We're going to chat about the post-trade deadline NHL. We're going to talk some NASCAR, some golf, a little bit of college basketball conference tournaments as well. The reason why Kyle Hunter not on today's show is that right now we only have odds out there for the Big South Conference Tournament and the Atlantic Sun Conference Tournament. We talked about the A-Sun on Friday, so if you missed that segment, you definitely want to go and check that one out as that conference tournament starts tonight. But we're hoping that by tomorrow we'll have some more odds out for some of the other conference tournaments. So that's why we pushed Kyle back Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. We'll be able to talk Big South still because those games start late tomorrow. But hopefully we'll get some odds out for some of the other conference tournaments that do start this week. Again, back-to-back segments, 13 conference tournaments start this week, including the A-Sun, which we already talked about. So that would be 12. Six will come your way on Tuesday. Six will come your way on Wednesday, unless we don't have odds, in which case, you know, we'll try to do the best that we can. But we'll have Kyle Hunter here on Tuesday and Wednesday this week. Rolf Michaels will start off tomorrow's show. And, of course, Brian Blessing here on today's show. So that'll be what you have to look forward to here this week. I just wanted to let you know that here at the top of the program. Hopefully you listen to all the shows and all the segments and all the guests. But if you are looking for Kyle Hunter, you'll hear him on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Very exciting day over there today. As conference tournament odds get posted, I will keep posting our conference tournament previews. In fact, I just got the Big South up right before the show. But also this afternoon, along with my preview of the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, I'll be putting up my Major League Baseball betting guide in article form. Now, we will have a full PDF document and a Kindle ebook of my MLB betting guide with my 30 season win total previews, and then also my division futures, pennant futures, World Series futures, Cy Young, MVP, and Home Run King futures. All of that will be in one PDF and also in that ebook. But today I'll start posting those in article form over at bangthebook.com, so you can check those out if you don't want to wait any longer. We're still waiting on the formatting of the ebook and the PDF from our SEO company and the people that are helping us out with that. But I want to get that. I want to start getting that posted. The season just 24 days away now. So I will start posting that over at bangthebook.com. So while you're over there checking out Kyle Hunter's daily college basketball piece, Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks piece, all of our daily NBA and college basketball content, as well as our weekly content like soccer, golf, tennis, UFC, etc., you'll start to get my Major League Baseball stuff. So very excited about that. It has been a very, very busy time, to say the least. But as I've been feeling better, I've got my mojo back. I'm back to being my high-volume self. So really getting a lot of stuff done here in a short amount of time, and you'll find it all over at bangthebook.com. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Very, very busy time of year here, obviously. And again, switching things up a little bit with the guests. Probably going to forget what day it is a few different times here throughout the week. But one thing I know for sure is that it is Monday. That means the Monday mailbag. So I got some listener questions here to chat about on today's show. And of course, you can always send these to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods or via email, adam@bangthebook.com. Happy to answer anything and everything except for politics and some personal things. But, again, if you ever have questions, and I'll try to continue this throughout the month of March. And also, I'll do the Monday mailbag when we get to the Bettors Box. So, we'll still be able to talk about your thoughts, your listener questions as we go throughout the spring and summer here. And I guess I'll go ahead and answer that, because at ChazCorn24 on Twitter asked over the weekend, when is your MLB show making its comeback? Loved it last season, listened to every show. My thought right now is that the Bettors Box will return probably March 21st is going to be my thought. And then I'll just do Thursdays until we finish March Madness. So I'll do March 21st and March 28th with the Bettors Box. And then we'll start the full-fledged Monday-Thursday Bettors Box on April 1st. That would be the day, obviously, of the national championship game in college basketball. But, you know, I don't do the full shows Thursday and Friday of the two March Madness weeks, of the first weekend and also of the Sweet 16 round. So, you know, that would be a good time to transition over to the Bettors Box. So I'm thinking March 21st and March 28th will be editions of the Bettors Box. That is my MLB betting podcast. A lot of great information on those, something I really enjoy doing. And in fact, it's something where I put together all of my notes for the show into a Word document. And if you want, I can put you on the mailing list for those. I did have a mailing list about 115 strong last year. If you were on that, I'll just start sending you the notes. If you decide you don't want to be on it anymore, or if you want your name added to the list, just hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods or email me adam@bangthebook.com. I will either put you on that list or take you off of that list. But Monday, Thursday is the format for the Bettors Box. As we go throughout the spring here, you know, we'll have the Masters, we'll have the Kentucky Derby, all the Triple Crown races, the Open Championship. You know, we'll still be doing the UFC previews with Christian Pina. So we'll still have a lot of other content, but with it primarily just being baseball season, that's what we'll mostly talk about. Sometimes I'll do one-off shows with the Tuesday Takeover and stuff like that. But keep it tuned to Bang the Book Radio. Maybe baseball's not your thing. Hopefully I can change your mind with that. But, you know, if baseball is your thing or you are interested in baseball, you should definitely enjoy those Bettors Box segments that will be coming up here over the spring and summer. But again, right now I would say March 21st will be an edition of the Bettors Box. March 28th, which is obviously opening day, I'll do an edition of the Bettors Box then as well. Make sure I try to get that one out early. Maybe that's something I'll do Wednesday night into Thursday. Try to get some more lead time on that with a lot of day games for opening day. But in any event, you know, I'll make sure that I cover everything that I possibly can on those Bettors Box segments and, of course, over at bangthebook.com as well. So that is kind of the framework we're looking at for the baseball stuff here. And again, we'll be posting my baseball content over at bangthebook.com here today. Very, very excited about that. Definitely looking forward to getting some feedback on that type of stuff. And then also, you know, seeing, you know, what happens here throughout the month of March. You know, a lot of late free agent signings. We already have some pretty big injuries, including Salvador Perez, Clayton Kershaw, Carlos Martinez, you know, a lot of injury considerations already. So, you know, that's one of the things that's kind of slowed me down a little bit along with getting sick. But you know, there were just some guys holding the market hostage. And, you know, I didn't really want to go and write a team preview for somebody. And then all of a sudden they signed somebody like Bryce Harper, you know, so a little bit disappointed to be getting the guide out as late as I am, but still well over 3 weeks lead time for all my Major League Baseball stuff. All right, speaking of Major League Baseball, let's go ahead and answer this question here first for the Monday Mailbag. This from longtime listener at MG86 on Twitter, at Mikey Totals, I believe he is, but at MG86 on Twitter is how I know him. Michael Govis is a longtime listener of the show, and he says here, my question is, you mentioned fading Rick Porcello due to last year's numbers. I get why it's done during the season, but why from 1 year to the next? Would you fade or play on teams based off advanced metrics? Each season is different with new players on teams. If, let's say, Porcello was on the Giants, would you still fade him? Well, being at Oracle Park, formerly known as AT&T Park, would definitely change the expectations I would have for any pitcher. But, you know, when I look at Rick Porcello, last season, a lot of really concerning developments. Fastball velocity was down a little bit. Did go higher usage with the slider, 24% slider usage, which is a reason why his strikeout rate went up. But as I mentioned on last week's show, you know, Rick Porcello posted a career high K percentage at 23.5%, but his swinging strike rate was only 8.7%. League average for starting pitchers was 10.2% across all of baseball. So There are some advantages here for Porcello. He perennially has one of the higher first pitch strike percentages, which is very good for him. And also, you know, he's a guy that does tend to get a fair amount, probably about an average amount, of swings outside the strike zone. But he's also a guy with a very high zone contact percentage. And a lot of times when you see guys that can't get swings and misses in the strike zone, they do tend to fall off the following year. Porcello looks like one of those guys to me. Again, that swinging strike rate. In fact, you know, you look at his 2017 season, 4.65 ERA, 4.60 FIP, 4.43 xFIP. Last year, 4.28 ERA, 4.01 FIP, 3.87 xFIP. You know, last season, his numbers were much better, but his swinging strike rate was even lower last year than it was 2 years ago when he had a tougher go of things. So for me, I look at Porcello, and I don't believe in the profile. I don't believe in the command. I don't believe that the strikeout gains are here to stay. And again, excuse me, you know, as I mentioned, typically when you see a strikeout increase, you see a BABIP increase, batting average on balls in play. The reason for that is because you've got a lower sample size of balls in play, and those are still going to go for hits a pretty, you know, reasonable average amount of the time. Well, Porcello in 2017, 324 BABIP against, last year 285 BABIP against. So about a 40-point drop there in his batting average on balls in play against to go along with what I believe is an unsustainable strikeout rate. You get his career average BABIP 306, so he was 21 points off of that. So I would definitely expect his batting average on balls in play to regress. Well, if his strikeout rate regresses and he's giving up more hits on balls in play, that means more runners on base, more balls in play, more chances for things to go awry. So I think Porcello is a guy that does drop off across the board. And, you know, even though it is a different year, even though there's some different personnel and things of that sort, you know, you can still look for these individual outliers for pitchers. You know, guys that post like a BABIP that's 50 or 60 points off of their career average, you can expect that to regress. I think it's very fair to expect that to come back towards his career norm. That's all I'm doing. I'm a regression analysis handicapper when it comes to baseball. I'm looking to prey on those outliers. Whether I go for or against those outliers, you know, that's dependent on a pitcher-by-pitcher basis and on a team-by-team basis. But those are the things I'm looking for. You know, Porcello also had his lowest home runs allowed per nine innings, really his second lowest over the last 4 years. I would expect that to regress as well. Even though he's increased the slider usage, I think that there are a lot of areas in which he's going to fall off the map a little bit. So he's a fade guy to me. And I look for these opportunities, and, you know, if they don't work out, I have to pivot fairly quickly. But I have a reasonable expectation that Porcello, a guy whose strikeout percentages over the last 4 years, 20.2%, 21.2%, 20.5%, 23.5%. I would expect that to regress based on his past history, based on the profile that he has as a pitcher. So that's really what I'm looking for when it comes to guys I'm looking to fade or follow, or teams I'm looking to fade or follow. And, you know, all of this is done, a lot of this is done based off of the advanced metrics. It's just the style of handicapping that I look to use. You know, as I'll go through my division by division previews here on Bang the Book Radio, you know, I mentioned players I'm looking to fade, the pitchers I'm looking to back, stuff like that. And the reason is because I'm seeing outliers from their past performances that I don't think are sustainable. And there are usage changes involved, like Porcello, as I just mentioned, throwing his slider a lot more last season. Maybe it does keep him off the barrel. Maybe it does get him more swings and misses outside of the strike zone. But with the velocity decrease, with what I've seen from him over the course of his career, I can't take that as a sustainable development until I see it. If he does continue to keep that strikeout rate high, I'll pivot. I won't look to back him, but I won't fade him as aggressively as I'm planning to early on in the season here. So again, you're talking about a guy that's, you know, in a tough division for pitchers with a lot of very good offensive park factors. Talking about a guy who I don't think has very good command, so his margin for error is kind of slim. So I talk about a lot of those guys in the MLB betting guide, and I will, as I mentioned, do a follow-up guide here in the month of March, looking at individual pitchers and team, and, you know, individual team betting tips to keep in mind over the course of the season, because the guide is more of a year-long overview based on the season win totals. So, again, a lot of baseball coverage coming your way at bangthebook.com. That's really the important thing here. At 10Jet67 reaches out on Twitter and says, "My grandpa was a cop in New York City, big Yankee fan. He's the one that got me interested in betting. I'm just curious how you guys got your start," and I will ask this question as we go throughout the week here to our guests on Bang the Book Radio. As far as me personally, you know, obviously I've always had an interest in sports, and, you know, about 2006, 2007 is when I really got my interest in sabermetrics. So the reason I got my start in sabermetrics is because I've been a lifelong Indians fan. I wanted to know why they operated the way that they did, how they operated under their financial constraints. That led me to sabermetrics, so on and so forth. Now I'm at the point that I'm at today. As far as from a betting standpoint, sophomore year roommate in college had an account on Bodog, you know, and was sort of telling me about it, sort of showing me the ropes a little bit in the business. And, you know, really, I started like a lot of people do, you know, playing the $5 three-line parlays, you know, almost like the parlay cards you can get from locals or whatever else. And, you know, that was something that, you know, was a good way to get my feet wet here in the business. And ever since then, I've really evolved in terms of, you know, both my on-air presence and then also with the ways that I've thought about this business. So, you know, started doing this very, very recreationally, you know, around 2007, 2008, and then sort of progressed from there. You know, I would do some betting content for various websites as a freelancer. I would do some stuff for the Cleveland Fan that I used to write for. And then I got hooked up with Beyond the Bets. They had a very good website. A guy named Jeff ran that, and also a very good betting forum. Met actually Parker Michaels on that betting forum. Met a lot of very good people in that forum that I still talk to this day. But, you know, I wound up doing a college football podcast with Matt Lindemann for Beyond the Bets. We did that for a couple of seasons, and then he got hired at a sports book and wasn't able to do it anymore. And then at that point in time, that's when my current boss here at Bang the Book found me and asked if I wanted to do something similar for him. And, you know, just got to a point where I just gradually increased the volume and increased my workload. So, you know, for those that are interested in this business, maybe want to do what I do, or at the very least, you know, get published somewhere, you got to put in the time. You got to put in the effort. You got to do a lot of shit for free. I mean, that's what I did, you know, with Beyond the Bets. I didn't get paid for the articles I wrote or for the podcast that I was doing, but gave me some exposure, gave me some opportunities, gave me a network, and gave me some connections in this business that really did further my development as a handicapper and as somebody who, you know, analyzes and evaluates this industry on a day-to-day basis. So if you are interested, start a blog, start a podcast, do whatever it is you can do to put your name out there and get yourself, you know, a little bit of a presence out there in what is a quickly changing market. You know, excuse me, we've got so much going on here in this business that it is hard to carve out a niche. Fortunately, I've been able to do that here with Bang the Book. But, you know, again, it's been a long process. I mean, it's been over a decade, and I still feel like I've got a lot to learn here in this business. I know I have a lot to learn in this business. And, you know, it's an ever-evolving business as well. So a lot of things changing. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's story is kind of different for how they wound up getting themselves to the position that they're in right now. And, again, I will ask our guests that here as we go, you know, throughout the week. But, you know, for me, it was a rather humble start in the business, really. And, you know, a lot of times I just kind of fell ass backwards into things, and I'm very, very lucky. But, you know, also I've put in the time, I've put in the effort, I've put in the volume. And, you know, for anybody that does want to do this seriously, or, you know, maybe want to cover it from a media standpoint, something like that, just do something to put yourself out there. Do something to get yourself seen and heard, and also take constructive criticism. I've faced a lot of criticism, you know, growing up as a writer, growing up, you know, in the media side of things. And, you know, some of it is just people that want to bitch and complain, and some of it is people that, you know, have something constructive to say. And you have to be able to separate which is which and then take it to heart if it is constructive. And, you know, I think that we've done a lot of good things here with Bang the Book. I've done a lot of good things professionally that, you know, I wouldn't have done if I wasn't so open-minded and if I wasn't, you know, so committed to working hard at this craft. So, in a long story short kind of way, just, you know, doing basically $5 three-line parlays, you know, back in college. And that's pretty much how I got my start and how I got interested here in this business. All right, so we take a look at a question here from at SciFlyGuy on Twitter, who is Danny Vorgs, who does a phenomenal job with our NFL power ratings over the course of the NFL season. And obviously a lot of people experiencing NFL withdrawal here at this point in time. Still a long way away from that. But Danny Vorgs, a must read every week over at bangthebook.com. And he asked here today for the Monday mailbag, if you guys have the time, a quick rundown of any value in the NCAA tournament odds 2 weeks out would be great. Keep up the good work, guys. Obviously, I'll try to touch on this with Kyle Hunter as we come up here with Tuesday and Wednesday segments. But you know, as I'm looking up and down the board here, you know, it's very hard to try and do something now from an NCAA tournament standpoint, because in a lot of cases, you're going to get better prices once Selection Sunday rolls around and the bracket is decided. You know, right now, I think it's pretty tough to find some value candidates out there just because we're 2 weeks away from finding out what the draws are going to be for teams. Like I said, you know, you may look at a team right now, let's say an Iowa State or a Kansas State, something like that, sitting in the 40-1 range. Well, after they get their draw for the NCAA tournament, after they're put in a region with Duke, Gonzaga, Virginia, Kentucky, you know, obviously the top two seeds that are out there like Tennessee, Michigan State, North Carolina, maybe Nevada's a two seed, probably not after the Utah State game. You know, do they draw some tough number threes like Purdue, or, you know, where does Houston get ranked, stuff like that? You know, you may find a situation where Iowa or Kansas State, 60-1 once the tournament draw comes out. I think right now it's pretty tough to grab and hold any of the positions that are out there. I do think as you kind of look up and down the board here, Cincinnati at 80-1. Offensively, they're always challenged, but defensively, they play a style of play that a lot of teams don't run into during the regular season. Cincinnati is a type of team that, because they slow the game down so much, they ugly it up, it's very, very physical, there are a lot of teams out there that aren't going to want to play that style of basketball. So maybe Cincinnati at 80-1, because they're a little bit different, is the type of team that could give some teams fits. You know, we joke about the Pac-12, and I wouldn't take Washington right now at 80-1 because I think they're, you know, their seeding is going to give them a better price come the NCAA tournament. But, you know, Kyle Hunter talked about that on Friday. Their matchup zone is going to be tough to play against. You know, in this one-and-done format, if, you know, you have a bad shooting performance, you're done. And when you face a zone, you better shoot the ball well. So Washington, if they get into the field, I wouldn't take them now at 80-1, but they're a team I would maybe look at in 2 weeks' time if they get in. And maybe they're 100-1 or 125-1, better time to go out there and take a team like that. So I think right now it's very, very hard to take really any of these teams because we're so close to finding out what the draws are. And overall, I would say that no prices are going to go down. You know, maybe a Gonzaga or a Virginia or a Kentucky, something like that, based on the two seed and the three seed that they're paired with, something like that. But a lot of these mid-range prices are not going to go down. You know, they're only going to go up because of the draw. Because once we see who they have to play, what dangerous mid-major they get in the first round, stuff like that, these numbers are probably going to be on the rise. So right now, I don't think there's anything I would invest in. Could you maybe make a case for a Villanova at 45-1? Maybe, because Jay Wright is such a good head coach, and they're so good in the month of March. But you know, for Villanova, what is their draw? You know, who are the top seeds that they run into? Well, you got to keep that in mind here, because hedging value is so important when you get to the NCAA tournament that, you know, if you take Villanova at 45 and you could have them at 60 in 2 weeks, that gives you a lot more wiggle room and a lot more equity on that ticket. So for right now, I don't know if there's anybody I would take a look at. Not, you know, at this point in time where, you know, we don't really know what the draw is going to look like. The bubble is pretty weak this year. I don't know if I would take a stab at really anyone, because right now you look at the mid-range prices and it's hard to see teams that are capable of making a run unless you know who they're going to play and who their matchups are going to be against. So that's definitely something I think you want to keep in mind here, is that there's probably not a ton of equity in going out there and buying any of these teams now. The time to do it would have been earlier on when you could have had some of these teams at 150-1 or 125-1 before they settled in and before they solidified their positions in the NCAA tournament, when they were maybe still, you know, kind of a bubble team or a not guaranteed team. Those are the times to hit those teams. Now, at this point in time, 2 weeks until Selection Sunday, I really don't think that this is the best time of year to look to do something like that. So We'll talk a lot about money line rollovers and hedging and things of that sort here as we get closer to March Madness. Of course, talk about those things for the conference tournaments as well. But for right now, I don't know if there's a whole lot of incentive and a whole lot of value in jumping into the NCAA tournament futures board at this point in time. One thing I can tell you, though, this is a pretty cool development for us here on Bang the Book Radio. For the month of March, we're going to be partnering with PropSwap. I'm sure, hopefully you know about PropSwap. If you don't, we will have Ian from PropSwap on Bang the Book Radio here a couple of times this month. You know, when it comes to finding value, no matter what time of year it is, price shopping is key. And whether you're buying a car, making a sports bet, you always want to make sure that you're getting the best number. And at PropSwap, you'll find the best numbers on futures because PropSwap is a marketplace where people buy and sell active sports bets. You know, last year, thousands of tickets were sold at odds better than any sports book, including one customer who bought a Warriors to win the championship ticket at 2-1 odds. Because at PropSwap, you're buying the bet from another person. Sellers are able to offer you their bet at odds that a sports book would never offer. And in fact, you know, we'll have Ian talk more about this when he comes on the show, but this is something that's legal in a lot of states out there. You know, these are physical tickets, and it's legal in a lot of different states. So you know, you are able to go out there, shop around for some futures tickets, shop around for some prices that are out there. And, of course, if you're somebody holding a futures ticket, we talk about hedging all the time. Well, PropSwap allows you the opportunity to do that as well. So start getting the best number by going to PropSwap.com/BTB for Bang the Book. That's PropSwap.com/BTB. Another opportunity for you here from a hedging standpoint to get involved in the futures market with some good prices. And then, of course, you know, to and not even just through the month of March, but they always have stuff for Major League Baseball, NFL, college football, all that type of thing. But obviously here in the month of March with so many futures and tournament futures and things of that sort, PropSwap, a very good opportunity for you. So you have PropSwap.com/BTB, and we will get Ian here on the program at least once, probably twice, for either conference tournaments or March Madness. Yeah, one more listener question to talk about here on the Monday Mailbag. This comes from Jeremy via email. I like this question a lot. Something I've noticed is that I've had some success in recent weeks. NCAA basketball road underdogs in the +7 to +10 range. I've had good success overall this year in college basketball, but I've definitely noticed that road dogs in the +7 to +10 range seem to come through quite often. Now, this is obviously an extremely small sample size, perhaps just a good or lucky run, but it seems like there might be something there. So I was wondering if you had any input or had heard of any theory behind this. Maybe those road dogs, excuse me, getting 7 to 9 points are right in that sweet spot. Well, think about it. College basketball home court advantage, right? Probably ranges from anywhere from 2 to 5, 5.5, maybe 6 points overall. So when you talk about an underdog, it's in a +7 to +10 range. On a neutral site, that's, you know, that dog is +3, +4, something like that. And I think one thing that we have kind of realized here is we've gone through our conference by conference breakdowns on the show this season. Across the board, it feels like college basketball home court advantage is a little bit overrated, is a little bit too baked into the line. I think that's something that we've kind of found as we've gone through conference by conference. So I think when you talk about these road underdogs in the +7 to +10 range, we're mostly talking about one or two possession games instead of the 3 or 4 possession games that the line would suggest. So I think it does make some sense that dogs in that range wind up being pretty good bets. You know, of course, that range of +7 to +10, kind of where teams stop falling as well. So, you know, you've got maybe some equity with some key numbers in that respect. But I think you probably are onto something here because I think it's one of those ranges where we can see that home court advantage in college basketball is a little bit overrated. So that actually may end up being something of a sweet spot. You know, you talk about a line that's in the, you know, 3 to 5 range, something like that. That's a pick 'em on a neutral with just home court advantage baked into the line. That's a coin flip type of game. You know, in the 7 to 10 range, it's not a full on coin flip, but you know, the road dogs probably do have a better chance than the line would suggest. So I do think in that type of range, you probably have found a sweet spot, Jeremy. It probably is something I think should continue to work out for you there, at least until we see books start to account for home court advantage a little bit differently. So, okay, if you ever have questions for the Monday Mailbag, you can send them to me on Twitter, @SkatingTripods, or email me, adam@bangthebook.com. Again, Major League Baseball will be starting here probably March 21st on Bang the Book Radio. MLB stuff getting posted over at bangthebook.com today. Conference tournaments as odds keep coming out. Again, make sure you check out that propswap.com/BTB link. See if there are some futures tickets that you want to look to invest in, or maybe some that you do want to sell as the month of March goes on. We've got one guest here for this Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How you doing, pal?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate the time here. Appreciate your flexibility switching from Tuesday to Monday. The only problem is I think you and I are both going to be thrown off all week now.
You know what? There's so much going on, kid. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, okay, turn the page. What's on tonight? What's coming up tomorrow? I'm sitting here this morning, and, you know, the combine's behind us and looking at mock drafts and, you know, the NHL's turning for home, the push for the playoffs, NBA, and, you know, listening to your discussion, here we go with basically championship weeks. It's really not championship week, right? I mean, we got conference tournaments coming up. It's a great time of year.
It is. It's a very busy time of year, and I'm happy to be feeling better because I'm back to being my high-volume, high-octane self, and there's no better time to be that than the month of March, especially with how much I pour into baseball. And, you know, something that we're not even going to talk about here yet in one of our segments, Brian, but also we're starting to get into the better races for the Road to Kentucky Derby as well this month. So, I mean, for you, it's just got to be out of control.
Oh, yeah. Saturday was a massive disappointment. I had Hidden Scroll 50-1 for the Kentucky Derby. And in the Fountain Youth went off as the favorite, even money. And I, for the life of me, I don't know. And Joel Rosario is a great jockey. You know, it's easy to second guess guys. But I, what this guy was thinking with a chance to pick up some Derby points and in the process teach this horse something. He goes and gets him cooked in a ridiculous speed duel with a 100-1 shot, and the horse flattened out and finished fourth. You know, I'm hoping Vilmont doesn't give up on this horse. I hope they give him one more chance because, you know, sometimes you say the horse isn't good enough. I really think the horse was compromised by the decision the jockey made during the race. But that's just one of all the preps that are coming up.
Yeah, it's an insanely busy time of year. I know you're definitely looking forward to things calming down a little bit whenever that actually happens. And, you know, I know I am as well here, but let's start by talking some NHL because a week ago was the trade deadline and we saw a flurry of activity, particularly right around the deadline time as a lot of trades were backed up at the NHL central offices and deals were basically announced until I think 5 o'clock Eastern time or something like that. So now we're a week removed from that. Have you seen any teams get a post trade deadline bump?
I think they're still, you know, it's kind of sorted out. The one's right here, Mark Stone's arrival, and all of a sudden, you know, Vegas has won 4 in a row, albeit the last two games have been dominant. They could have lost the first two games of this 4-game win streak. But it's funny, Stone's arrival is not like he's lighting it up with points, but this team is carrying themselves a little differently. And honestly, it was one of the first times. It's only happened a handful of times this year. When this team went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, they were rolling four lines. And that was the beauty of it. The Gallant would put the fourth line out there in a 3-3 game with 3 minutes to go with confidence. This year, it's just that something's always been off. Since Stone arrived, A, it's gotten Max Pacioretty going. And then by dropping some guy third line, and then the fourth line's always been good. Yesterday, the fourth line was dominant in a 3-0 shutout of Vancouver. So one guy's arrival has made Vegas a different team. In fact, Fleury's got back-to-back shutouts, hasn't given up a goal now in 160-plus minutes. Columbus has got an army of guys, but it's been a mixed bag. And, I mean, it's right in your backyard, man. I mean, Columbus is all in. And, you know, to this point, it's still a little bit of a learning curve here to see, you know, what they're going to do. Pittsburgh, maybe, you know, hanging around now and starting to right the ship. I think the one that didn't do a lot, and I do believe it's been a great season, Adam, is Montreal. And I think Montreal might be in slip and slide mode here. And then, you know, then the other teams in the West, the biggest one, and they didn't do a whole heck of a lot. How about Arizona? Arizona's won six in a row and for 20 minutes got themselves back in the playoffs the other night. Went by Minnesota before Minnesota, Calgary, and Calgary. But Arizona's knee-deep in it, and Rick Tocchet is doing a great job with that team.
Yeah, I'd be happy to see Arizona make it. Obviously, there's not a lot of buzz for that team there in Glendale, but it would still be nice to see them, you know, kind of get something for this youth movement that they've put together, not just on the ice, but also in the front office. The Columbus thing, I mean, man, if the playoffs started today, they're out. And obviously, there's a ton of games left to go, a lot of maneuvering to still be done. But, you know, you can't lose 4-0 to Edmonton at home after you went all in and you basically traded the next two drafts. You can't let that happen. And then follow it up by getting dominated by Winnipeg at home. Real bad look for the Jackets last week.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, a lot of new guys, and they find a groove. The first order of business is to get in, right? I mean, all of a sudden you kind of penciled them in with all the moves they made, but maybe not so fast, right? I mean, there's a bit of a transition stage going on there. Buddy, all the things we talk about, we've been doing this now a couple of years together. You know, some things are just tried and true, and it's like manna from heaven. The dad's trip has obviously in the last 3 years turned into this ridiculous gift from the betting gods. You know, there's other thing after trade deadline, certain guys are going to go off, and then water will find its level. The other tried and true one, and sometimes it's hard to find out about them, playing the road team against a team that's got a big ceremony. And Calgary did one of the biggest ceremonies I've ever seen. I'm watching the Sabres-Leafs game on Hockey Night in Canada Saturday. And in the second intermission of the Sabres-Leafs game, Hockey Night in Canada goes and shows 20 minutes of the Jerome Iginla ceremony, which went on for another 40 minutes. And the home team has no shot. You know, Minnesota beat them that night. You always fade the home team on a big ceremony night.
All right, so one team I do want to touch on here real quickly. They're not in action tonight. They play Carolina tomorrow. Carolina, similarly hot team, but I don't know if anybody's as hot right now as the Boston Bruins. 10 of their last 11, swept a West Coast trip against the Ducks, Kings, Sharks, and Golden Knights, did lose 2-1 to the Blues in a game where they're probably the better team for most of it, then come home and completely dominate San Jose and Tampa Bay up there at the Garden. The Bruins look deadly right now.
Yeah, no, great run by them. You know, and the funny thing is, I mean, this is a big push for them, and it's a big time. They only have a 3-point lead over the Leafs, and home ice advantage really could be the difference in that series. That is a coin flip series, Boston and Toronto. They've kind of been on a collision course for a long time, so. It's important to be getting these points. Funny thing is, I heard this from a bunch of people. A good friend of mine is a big Bruin. Said, oh, did you see there the Bruins killed the Lightning? Yeah, okay, really, please. You know, I mean, what are the Lightning playing for right now? And that's another one to be watching. I mean, you know, they've already got – they don't have to play another game. They've got the President's Trophy. At some point, you would envision, and I would think systematically the rest of the way, it would behoove Tampa Bay to be giving some guys some rest. You know, players may not be doing a cartwheel about that if they've got bonuses for certain things. But, you know, Tampa Bay, they know where they are. They know, you know, they're going to be the top seed. It would be wise for them to be resting guys. I think, not that he's bad. He's had a great season. I think you'll see a lot of Louis Domingue in the Nets, too, for Tampa.
Yeah, Tampa Bay 15 points clear of anybody else in the NHL, which is astonishing here. They still have 16 games left to go for this season. So, Brian, let's take a look at tonight's card, and we'll start with a team that obviously you and I care about quite a bit, the Buffalo Sabres. Been a Sabres fan since high school when I was watching you on the pre- and post-game shows on Empire Sports Network there. Sabres -125, -130 favorite against Edmonton. That's not a real great look, judging by how they started out the season, to be this small of a favorite at home against Edmonton.
Adam, this is It's funny, and I'm reverting back to the glasses half full, but then they have squandered a real opportunity. We see teams, the Astros, the Cubs, but, oh, look what they're building. They're going to be great. And we've seen those teams do it earlier than you thought they would, right? I mean, you get a 10-game winning streak at Thanksgiving. You're number one overall in the league, points-wise at least. And they just spit the bit. They had gone 31 games. Oh, by the way, Edmonton's in the same boat. 31 games now that they've been unable to record back-to-back wins. I mean, that's almost unthinkable. And, you know, they'll play great, and then they'll play horrible. I look at the game tonight. I don't trust either team. I think the loss to Toronto, there have been many. I mean, their fate was sealed. We're seeing whatever. Here's the crazy thing is that everybody keeps hanging on to this fingernail of hope. I mean, it's crazy. Is it possible? I mean, look what Arizona's done, right? I mean, Arizona wasn't even in that discussion. All of a sudden, you go on a six-game winning streak, you pick up 12 points. I mean, you can leapfrog a lot of teams. I like the over in the game. I think the one thing you'll get here, and I'm not sure – no, it's not on nationally in the state, but it's a nationally televised game in Canada. But it's Eichel versus McDavid, and you know both of these guys will be looking to put on a show against each other. They'll always be attached at the hip coming out of the draft. I'd look for those two guys to kind of go bonkers tonight. I'd look for goals.
All right, and then one other game here tonight in the NHL. This one a much bigger type of game, a headline grabbing kind of game. Toronto on the road at the Saddle Dome in Calgary. Similar line for this game. Calgary -125, -130 favorite. This is a really good game tonight.
Yeah, I'll be watching this one. I mean, it stands to reason. You think you would see goals. There's two things in play here. Toronto got mauled by the Islanders. And they were, believe me, they were upset and panic-stricken about the way that game went down. Then they came back, and Buffalo was ahead of them on Saturday night, and in Buffalo, as they are accustomed to doing, kind of beat themselves, and Toronto won the game with ease. Toronto is going to want to try to, you know, build a little rhythm here because that Islanders thing was pretty distressing to the people in Toronto. Calgary, again, is coming off a loss. I mean, they've been dominant all year long. You know, you'd look for a good effort and a bounce-back effort. Again, I give them the pass for having to play after the ceremony on Saturday night. The one thing kind of keeps me away from it, and I don't know so much in the NHL that there are look-ahead spots in the regular season, but for the better part of 3 weeks, I would say this. I've been saying to the people here in Vegas, and I've got a funny feeling these games with Vegas are going to be pretty intense with the Flames. To send messages saying we got a feeling we may bump into you in the playoffs. So it's a bit of a look ahead spot for Calgary, but not that much. On paper, great game, but I'm just going to watch it and be entertained.
Calgary and Vegas play Wednesday night in Sin City, play Sunday in Calgary. So rapid revenge theory is something I talk about in my situational betting article over at bangthebook.com. That could be in play there on Sunday for the loser of Wednesday night's game. So, you know, we talked about it a little bit at the top of the segment here, Brian, as we transition over to the college basketball side for a couple of minutes. Conference tournaments, 13 of them start this week, including one tonight in the Atlantic Sun. 19 of them start next week, as we've got 32 conferences here. Any general conference tournament betting strategies from you, Brian?
Yeah, generally speaking, and I would even say that like it would apply even in a conference like this. Like Lipscomb's playing Kennesaw State tonight. Okay. I like the game over. But Lipscomb, Liberty, you think maybe on paper, right, they're on a collision course. The craziest thing is Jacksonville's a team with a horrible record that can score is actually hung with Lipscomb. Could maybe be a nice cover and an opportunity for it. And we're going to see this all the way through into the first round of the NCAA tournament. There'll be kids on the Lipscomb bench, right, that have been on the scout team and been practiced and part of the team. And, you know, if Lipscomb has, you know, a 20-point lead in the game tonight, the coach from Lipscomb is going to say, look, These games, the rest of our conference tournament, are going to become tougher, and then they're going to be a big underdog in the NCAA tournament. A lot of these kids on the scout team, if Lipscomb's got the game in the cookie jar late, the last 3-4 minutes, these kids are going to get to play. Because the coach is going to say, this is the last chance they're going to get to play. That's also going to be the case in the first round of the NCAA tournament with high-end teams that know the second-round game is going to be tough and they've got a 20-point lead. They're going to give those kids 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes at the end of the game so that the rest of their lives they can say, I played an NCAA tournament game. And that's the end for those guys. So the backdoor cover with the big dogs is always in play with that particular scenario in mind. First-round games in the NCAA tournament, and then it stands to reason it would be first-round games in championship week as well.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing, too, you kind of look at it almost with some correlation in that the back door is going to be open, but also, you know, these kids that don't get a chance to play. I mean, we did see Chris Beard absolutely go off with the alley-oop that Texas Tech had late in their game, but I think there are going to be times where these coaches say, yeah, normally I dribble out the clock, but these guys don't get to play at all. So I'm going to let them go out there and have fun and take some shots.
Let them play. I mean, it's not doesn't being out there. Give them a chance to play for 5 minutes.
And then that could have a direct impact on the total as well, to where you would expect it to be a stone cold under with a 20-point lead and a team milking the clock, but maybe they do kind of go up and down the floor a little bit more.
No, but the kid, you're sitting there going, oh, weaker guys are in there. So, it probably helps the under. I'm with you. I think it actually kind of goes the other way because if the top guys are in there, the coach is about taking 20 seconds off the shot clock or whatever, you know, burn some clock. But if the game's firmly in control, he's going to let these kids go, and they're going to play, and they're going to be out there. They're going to foul people. They're going to be trying to steal. You know what I mean? It's a basketball game. And actually, 4 minutes, it's actually played with urgency from those kids. And it actually probably ups the tempo of the game.
Yeah, definitely something you want to keep in mind, whether you're doing this stuff from a live betting standpoint or you're looking at the pregame positions. Keep that in mind here in these games, especially where you know you've got heavy conference tournament favorites or something like that playing these really, really weak teams in the first round and even the second round in some of these low major conferences here. So, Brian, again, we kind of use this betting the board segment as a grab bag to talk about all kinds of different things. NASCAR was in Vegas last weekend, the Pennzoil 400, also the Boyd Gaming 300 on the Xfinity Series side. What did you think about the new rules package? I know we talked about it a little bit last week. How did it affect the race, and how will it affect how you handicap going forward?
I think there's still a bit of a learning curve. I still think the best cars, the best teams still have the best engines, and you know it's still the same number of monster guys. I think restrictor plate racing, Talladega plays like that, you can still swing for the fences. In a lot of ways, it's kind of still the same characters, Adam. The one thing it did produce is some pretty crazy racing mid-pack. You know, I mean, they were 3 and 4 wide stretches of a race that's usually spread out like a parade through town. But the top cars still go and separate themselves, and the top 5 or 6 at a mile and a half track, those guys pull away, and they're the contenders all day long from start to finish. It promotes, from a betting perspective, with matchups, I think it has an impact, where it probably brings a guy into play, the quality of the driver in a match, which is always a thing, but it evens the car out, which makes the driver maybe even more important. But I think there's still a learning curve to see just, you know, who's adapted to it, who struggled, who's going to get better. The one thing we're seeing that is teams, the same sort of stuff keeps happening, man. Last week, Blaney had the race won. There was an accident in the pits. Yesterday, Kyle Busch, Austin Dillon, guys made they made egregious mistakes, speeding on the pit lane, too many men in the pit box. Honestly, the team matters too. You can't beat yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's there's no spring training really when you talk about NASCAR. I mean, it's just sort of everyone's kind of either got to develop and learn on the fly, or just sort of figure things out and get thrown into the fire right away. So Yeah, you would think as the season goes along, everything gets streamlined a little bit more, including adjustments to the rules package.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big learning curve. I mean, you know, some things aren't going to change. Kevin Harvick's going to win the Phoenix races, right? I mean, put that on the board. And then there are other teams like Kyle Busch's. He sped on the pit lane, but Busch's pit crew is always terrific. Brad Keselowski made a big push, just missed yesterday against Joey Logano. But, you know, pit strategy, Keselowski's team, they always put him in a position. Even if they're struggling, they'll go to an alternative pit strategy or something to get track position. So it's like anything. It's like Bill Belichick knows what he's doing on the sidelines of a Patriots game. You know, some of these guys just know what to do all the time, and other guys make mistakes.
All right, so again, like I said, we just kind of talk about all sorts of different things here on these Betting the Board segments. Brian's a jack of all trades, and that's a big help for us here on the show. We talked last week about the Honda Classic, and we talked about the difficulty of this course and about some of the different guys that we were kind of looking at here. Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler tie for second. You've got Ryan Palmer in the top five. Lucas Glover has been playing very well. The winner, Keith Mitchell, and the sixth-place finisher, Vijay Singh. So that's kind of what we talked about last week where, I mean, this is a very, very hard course where you may want to take some longer shot guys. And, you know, the stars were up there to some degree, but also some of those long shots in the running too.
That was the weirdest doggone tournament, bud. You know, I'm really good with the Thursday Warriors, but we talked about last week when we did the preview for this. It said this tournament, every year, what the winning score, what did the kid get in at? Nine? Did he make it to nine or eight? I think nine.
Nine.
900. And you had Ryan Palmer shoot a 63 yesterday. But this course, it plays like a U.S. Open. I mean, last year it was the second toughest course on the circuit other than the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills. And there was attrition and ups and downs and highs and lows. A couple of guys I had Zach Johnson and Sung J.M. Zach Johnson's right there in the first round. His guy's game's built for a major, fairways and green. He hung around. He was okay. Then I got Sung J.M. He's the leader at 60-1. He's the leader going to the third round. And he drove off a cliff on the first three holes of Saturday, never to be seen again. And the other guy we said, who wins the U.S. Open? Two of them in a row, Koepka. Koepka was right there. And, you know, Fowler made a nice push at the end. But when all is said and done, it's almost a shock that Koepka didn't kick the door down. But give the Mitchell kid credit. That was pretty impressive stuff.
All right, so we stay on the Florida swing here. But we go to Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Much, much stronger field here this week than what we had last week. We don't have Dustin Johnson in the field this week, but Rory, Tiger, Rose, Koepka, Ricky, Day, DeChambeau, Matsuyama, Leishman, Molinari, Fleetwood, Mickelson, Stenson, Poulter, Watson. Really, really good field here for this tournament down at Bay Hill. And this is one where, with the exception of Matt Every, who won this thing in 2014 and 2015, you got to be really, really good to win this tournament usually.
And horse for course, right? Tiger, he's proven he's right there. I think he had an excuse with the weather in L.A. He knows this course. He loves this course. He's had some great career moments on this course. You would think, and he's driving the ball well, but in his backyard, I would think Tiger very much is a guy that's in with a big shot. McIlroy is, you know, in the top five basically every tournament now. He's committed to playing the PGA Tour exclusively. McIlroy's a factor. It likely is a big name, as you allude to, that can win this thing. We're really early in the week. And, Justin Rose is a great player, but he's actually one of the hosts for the tournament. And it's an honor to be one of the hosts in Arnold Palmer's absence now. That's a lot of off course commitments and things that goes into it, which would make it, I think, pretty tough for Justin Rose this week. So I'd be looking to fade him because of that. But I'll do a lot more work during the week, Adam. Obviously, it's very early in the week. But I think we'll see Tiger in contention on Sunday. And the other thing, Bud, don't forget, I mean, not that, I mean, this is a monster tournament, but they are tuning up and trying to peak at the right time for the Players' Championship. And this is guys trying to get their game really tuned up for an event that's a resume builder. And guys that win the Players go on to win majors.
Well, and as you look at this field here, we do have very, very early odds. I'm sure these will move around quite a bit. Rory's a little bit more than 7-1 to win it. Tiger's the second favorite at 10-1. 8-time champion here. Pulling these odds from Five Dimes, by the way. Justin Rose, a little over 11-1. Kepka and Fowler in the 12-1 range. Day, 14-1. DeChambeau, 18. Then a big jump down to Matsuyama and Leishman at 28. Tommy Fleetwood, a guy I know you have been looking at here a few times this year. He's 33-1. But also an interesting thing about this event, 120 players with the invitational status, and also for the first time this event is added to the open qualifying series. So it is the first crack to gain entry into the open championship if you don't have that yet. So that's a big motivating factor for some of those guys that are, you know, probably going to be in the 80 to 100 to 1 range this week or a little bit higher.
Yeah, in Fleetwood, you know, world-class player, and I took a shot with him, and he's kind of right there. I would say this, and it's a long way off, but I think a guy like Fleetwood, and watch for guys like this, you know, they get a feel for these courses, and maybe next year's the year. I mean, it's a long way off, right? Course knowledge. I mean, Adam, you go out. I mean, it happened to me all the time to go play a course for the first time, and, you know, somebody, you play with somebody who plays there. Oh yeah, it's a dog leg left uphill. It's elevated. There's a creek on the left, and it's a little elevated, so it plays about a half club more. Okay, you know, you're taking all this information from someone, and you're hitting shots blind, right, for the first time. So even the pros, they've got to go and get the feel for a course, and the next year Fleetwood would say, well, I know I can't do this on this hole, because you only get one or two or three, you know, mistakes that'll shoot you out of a tournament over the course of 4 days. So guys like Fleetwood specifically, and maybe even McIlroy, right, who's playing all these tournaments now and these courses for the first time. You watch for them. I mean, it's next year, but we'll keep tabs on that learning curve for these guys. Always looking ahead, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You always want to look ahead to be sure. You know, I'll dig more into this tournament here this afternoon as well. Obviously, moving up a day does make it tougher for us with these golf tournaments. But in general, you know, having watched this tournament before, knowing about Bay Hill, just sort of as a general broad brush statement here, what types of players are you looking for? Is this a bomber's course? Is this a putting course? Is this a, you know, a you better hit the ball straight kind of course? How does this thing sort of play out?
It's a challenging course, and I think we'll look at the past winners. I mean, it obviously, it's a course that kind of separates the cream, right? So, you know, you obviously got it's a typical golf tournament, current form, come in, and you got to do all the right things. But clearly, it's a resume builder, and you know the best players in the world generally are winning this thing. So maybe it thins the herd to a degree. It's not like the Travelers or the John Deere Classic where you know, somebody or the Greenbrier in West Virginia, you know, like where Jonas Blix wins the thing. I think you got to be looking for a world-class player here.
Yeah, as you look at the recent winners, McIlroy last year, Leishman 2 years ago, Day in 16, Matt Every, as I said, 2014 and 15, Tiger back-to-back 2012 and 13, Martin Laird in 2011, Ernie Els in 2010, Tiger 08-09, Vijay Singh 07. So, yeah, it's been, you know, pretty much a who's who type of list, you know, for the present day when this tournament was played. So, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. What do you got going on those two programs here this week, Brian?
But we're getting close, bud. We got March Madness right around the corner. Obviously, the push for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Vegas Hockey Hotline, we do that weekdays, 1 o'clock Pacific in Sportsbook Radio. We'll be out and about, by the way, and March Madness. If I could, I guess, if you're coming to town for the NCAA tournament on Tuesday the 19th at Club Madrid at Sunset Station, we'll be doing a March Madness seminar Give a lot of great information out heading into the tournament. And then Thursday and Friday, 2 days of the NCAA tournament, I'll be doing the radio shows and hanging out in the Grand Ballroom downtown at the Golden Nugget with Tony Miller. Great venue to watch the games. So if you guys are, anybody's coming to town, stop down, say hi. Look forward to meeting you there. And all my radio shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Brian Blessing. And we'll be starting to crank out some videos for you for this week at bangthebook.com, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely looking forward to those. Check out our Bang the Book YouTube page. I'll have previews up here today of the AL Central and AL West. We'll get Brian's videos as well, including a look at this Arnold Palmer Invitational. And, you know, very busy time of year, man. Thank you so much for being flexible, changing this one day forward for me. Really, really appreciate it. Brian Blessing, Sportsbook Radio, Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Buddy, I'm glad you're feeling better because, I mean, you were downright pathetic there for a while.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Makes me
you sounded like you climbed the Himalayas for 5 days in a row.
I felt like it. I'm telling you, man. Like, I guess it wasn't the if it's gonna happen, it wasn't the worst time in the world. But if it would have happened like this week or this month. Oh, man. I mean, you know how it goes.
It sounded like it hurt to answer the phone.
It did. It hurt to do anything. But I'm feeling better now. And you know what? And I'm also happy for you as we wrap up this segment here. Happy for you that it's gotten warmer out there so you can quit complaining about the cold.
Pally, I'm telling you, we went from 7 inches of snow a week ago to 70 degrees this weekend. So the sticks are coming out. Time to go out and start whacking the white pellet a little bit.
There you go, buddy. Enjoy that. Again, Brian Blessing, Sportsbook Radio. Brian Blessing on Twitter. Take care, brother. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, bud. See you later.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing. Again, check out our Bang the Book YouTube page for the videos that he'll be doing for us here this week. And, of course, check out those two programs on KSHP.com. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll start with Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com, chat some college basketball with him during our Capping the Card segment. And then we'll finish up with Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com and daily contributor to BangTheBook.com for the first of two back-to-back handicapping the hardwood segments here for this week. So obviously Wednesday we'll have another one. Thursday, Brad Powers, Tony George. Friday, another UFC event with Christian Pina. And I'll probably do probably an AL Central breakdown, maybe AL West as well on Friday. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I'll talk to you again tomorrow.